Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to continue with our examination of some of the circumstances surrounding the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981. Listeners who are interested in this material are strongly encouraged to contact a tape duplication service named Archives on Audio and obtain the archive documentary programs Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, arguably the best work ever done on the shooting of Pope John Paul II. In this segment, we're going to review some of the curious circumstances surrounding Mehmet Ali Agha's assertions, later retracted, that he was paid on behalf of the Bulgarians. This, by the way, an element of the now thoroughly discredited Bulgarian thesis. But Mehmet Ali Agha implicated a Turkish national named Bekir Çelenk, C-E-L-E-N-K, as the paymaster on behalf of his alleged Bulgarian handlers. Bekir Çelenk supposedly, according to Agha, paid him the money to shoot Pope John Paul II, or in exchange for shooting Pope John Paul II. And this, according to Agha, was one of the things that firmly linked the Bulgarians and their KGB superiors to this particular crime. In previous segments, we've reviewed indications that, in fact, the Bulgarians did not shoot Pope John Paul II, nor did the KGB, but that, in fact, the fascist elements associated with Western intelligence may very well have performed this particular act to break up backdoor diplomatic negotiations underway between the Pope and the Kremlin, and that, in fact, the act itself may have also been intended as a provocation. Bekir Çelenk, interestingly enough, was one of the principal operatives on behalf of an arms-for-drug smuggling ring called STIBAM. That's spelled STIBAM. STIBAM is the major focus of Radio Free America program number 20, the fourth in a five-part series about the shooting of Pope John Paul II. Those were recorded in May of 1986. What we're going to do next is to revisit STIBAM, an arms-for-drug smuggling ring with more connections than a switchboard, most of those connections running in the direction of Western intelligence, many of them in the direction of U.S. intelligence as well. We're going to examine some interesting allegations, or some interesting information, I should say, concerning Mehmet Ali Agha and some of the early allegations he made concerning Bekir Çelenk. It now appears that Mehmet Ali Agha's Grey Wolves National Action Party, Milgü, a reactionary pan-Turkist and a fascist party, that Mehmet Ali Agha was a member of, other members of that party, other members of the Grey Wolves, the youth wing of that party, have been implicated in the background of the shooting of Pope John Paul II as accomplices for Mehmet Ali Agha. As we're going to see, some of those Grey Wolves were also deeply involved in drug smuggling, which raises a number of interesting questions. If Mehmet Ali Agha and his cohorts were being financed by Bulgarian intelligence, why did they need the money from the proceeds of heroin smuggling? And beyond that, the question is raised, why didn't the Bulgarians eliminate them when they simply would have been troublesome elements who could have implicated their superiors? As we shall see, according to Mehmet Ali Agha, Bekir Çelenk was one of the individuals involved in some of these drug deals, and as we saw in Radio Free America number 20, Bekir Çelenk was a key operative with the STIBAM arms for drugs ring, and that appears to have been controlled by Western intelligence, not the KGB. Yet another evidentiary tributary running between the milieu of the shooting of Pope John Paul II and Western intelligence, U.S. in particular, not the KGB. Research and translation credit for the following section of a book goes once again to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who has been doing his characteristically excellent work and characteristically selfless job of sharing that with us. The following extract comes from a book called Das Umfeld eines Skandals, The Background of Scandals. That was a book published in Switzerland and authored by Pascal Auclin, or Auclin, A-U-C-H-L-I-N, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, and Frank Garbelli, G-A-R-B-E-L-Y. That was published by Wirth Verlag of Zurich in 1990. And this segment involves some Grey Wolves involved with heroin smuggling. They were later busted, and as it turned out, the Grey Wolves who were busted were intimates of Mehmet Ali Agha. This section reads, and this, by the way, is from Chapter 4, entitled Heroin and Weapons, and it's entitled Pope Assassins as Drug Dealers in Switzerland. It reads, Hidden in the trunk's spare tire compartment, the Turk Nezvat Bilisen, B-I-L-E-C-E-N, had brought 3 kilograms of heroin from Milan to his apartment at Duliken, Solothurn, S-O-L-U-T-H-U-R-N, in mid-April of 1984. Duliken is D-U-L-L-I-K-E-N. This drug deal was the last straw for Guido L's indebted exchange office, Lemmy GmbH, at Hammerstrasse in Basel. If he did not get a lot of money overnight, several suits for fraud would threaten him immediately. In order to avoid bankruptcy, Basel's money exchanger had simply taken savings from the guest workers. Instead of sending the monies to the families of the workers, he poured them into the Lemmy Bank, that's L-E-M-I-B-A-N-K. Already, the fraud amounted to 390,000 francs. When the exchange office took over the stuff from Bilisen, Guido L. seemed rescued. An initial kilo had already found a taker. Also, a certain Johann Meyer wanted to buy. In a restaurant in Busfelden, the dealers quickly agreed to trade and arranged for a meeting place for the trade of goods. It was a trap because Johann Meyer worked as an investigator for the city of Basel's drug department. During the following weeks, the police arrested half a dozen accomplices and suspects, almost all of them Turks. On May 20, 1985, these Turks were brought to trial in Basel. 1 week later, the second trial started in Rome against Ali Aja and his accomplices. No one recognized that both of these proceedings were connected so closely. The media played down the Basel proceedings as an irrelevantly routine case and missed an absolute sensation they could not have gotten enough of otherwise. The accusation was represented by public prosecutor Jörg Schild, S-C-H-I-L-D, who had succeeded Max Imhoff in 1981 at the drug department, and who presented facts that suddenly made the plot to assassinate Pope John Paul II appear in a new light. So again, what we're looking at here are some of the gray wolf accomplices of Mehmet Ali Aja in the shooting of Pope John Paul II being busted in a heroin bust that they were engaged in, a heroin smuggling operation, that they were engaged in order to raise funds. Now, in the sections we're going to take a look at, the question is raised that if they were in fact being paid so handsomely by their alleged Bulgarian and KGB masters, as the now discredited Bulgarian hypothesis maintains, why did they need the money from drug smuggling to finance their activities? And also, how come the Bulgarians didn't eliminate these troublesome, apparently minor players? And again, remember the name Bekir Çelenk, who Mehmet Ali Aja first said was the individual who made payment on behalf of his alleged KGB slash Bulgarian controllers. He then retracted that in 1984, a couple of years after he made it. Note again that Bekir Çelenk, a primary functionary of the aforementioned Stibom arms for drugs ring. The next section of Das Umfeld eines Skandals, translated and researched for us by Dave White, reads as follows. The accused driver of the drugs, Nezvat Bilisen, B-I-L-E-C-E-N, had made a mistake during the hearing. He named the organizers of the drug deal, three gray wolves, Mehmet Sener, S-E-N-E-R, who was arrested, Abdullah Kotli, and Oral Çelik, both of whom went underground in France. Basel's police could prove that since 1981, the three right-wing radical Turks routinely stayed in Switzerland and obtained weapons for heroin. Especially Oral Çelik, like the Basel police, took unusual risks, although he was written up as a second international gunman of the Pope. Personally, he picks up relatively small amounts of heroin in Basel and Zurich. Up till now, it was supposed that Oral Çelik and Ali Aja had received millions from Bulgarian, that is, Soviet Secret Service, for the plot to kill the Pope. And Judge Ilario Martella had insisted that Bulgarians had helped Oral Çelik flee and would protect him. But how does this compare with the results of Basel's investigation? If Oral Çelik, the gunman of the Pope, indeed received millions and also was covered up by the Bulgarians, why was it necessary for him to have made money with the heroin trade? Most of all, why did he take such high risks if Interpol was looking for him? If the Bulgarians indeed instigated the Pope assassination, they would have liquidated the assassin Oral Çelik rather than letting him flee to the West. The risk of an arrest, therefore, would have been too great, and with it the risk that the Pope gunman would name the ones who gave him orders. Oral Çelik and Ali Aja were inseparable friends. He was my right hand. "He is dearer to me than a brother," unquote, said Ali Ajah about Oral Çelik in an interrogation in Rome. Even Mehmet Sener and Abdullah Kotli were part of the closest circle of friends of Ali Ajah. They knew each other since attending school in Malatya, Anatolia. Together they joined the Grey Wolves, the extreme right-wing terrorist movement that belongs to the Party of the National Movement, or MHP, of Colonel Arpaslan Türkeş. By the way, the background of the National Action or National Movement Party and Colonel Arpaslan Türkeş was discussed in our last segment. Continuing. At times, approximately 400 training camps existed in Turkey where Grey Wolves were drilled militarily toward terrorism and assassinations. Oral Çelik and Ali Ajah later met their friends Abdullah Kotli and Mehmet Sener in such a camp. Trial Judge Ilario Martella cited Ali Ajah in his concluding report, quote, I led a group of at least 50 men at the Grey Wolves, or it should, this is a literal translation, must have been of the Grey Wolves. Oral Çelik, Abdullah Kotli, and Mehmet Sener were my closest comrades, unquote. Since that time, the extreme right-wing weapons brothers hardly ever separated. Together in February of 1979, they planned the murder of Abdi Aypeki, the chief editor of the left-oriented Turkish newspaper Milliyet. Ali Ajah, who shot the newspaper man, was arrested and awaited his execution in the military prison Kartal Maltepo, M-A-L-T-E-P-O. With Oral Çelik's help, however, he managed to escape in time from the, quote, safest clink in Turkey, unquote. At first, he hid at his friends, Abdullah Kotli. Shortly after the escape, Ali Ajah again took care of the headlines. Again, this is a literal translation. It might appear a little awkward to some. In a letter to the editor of Milliyet on the eve of the Pope's visit to Turkey, he announced he would murder Pope John Paul II, quote, "This letter to the editor was written by Oral Çelik for me," unquote, he declared to the investigating judge Ilario Martella. After an excursion to Iran, Ali Ajah returned to Istanbul for a short time. Then he moved on to Sofia, together with his friends Oral Çelik, Abdullah Kotli, and Mehmet Saner, where, in addition, he met with Bekir Çelenk and received money and forged documents from Ömer Mersan. In February of 1981, he hid in Vienna at Jeringasa 15, that's Jeringasse. The apartment was rented by Abdullah Kotli. After trips to BRD and again to Bulgaria, the Wolves emigrated into Switzerland. According to an investigative report from a judge, Ilario Martella, it was here that final preparations were made for the assassination of the Polish Pope. Quote, "In the Sheraton Hotel in Zurich, I met with Bekir Çelenk," interrupting. Now, remember, Bekir Çelenk is a key operative on behalf of Stibom, the arms for drugs ring, about which we shall have more to say in a minute. Continuing with the text. "This contact was arranged by Musa Serdar Celebi, C-E-L-I-B-I, who was present at the Zurich meeting," unquote, testified Ajah to the Roman judge. In the Sheraton Hotel, the following was agreed upon. Bekir Çelenk pays 3 million Deutschmarks on order of the Bulgarian government for the assassination, 1 million in currency, and 2 million in weapons. Ali Ajah had implicated Bekir Çelenk at first in the interrogation of May 2, 1982. On July 13, 1982, he repeated his accusations again, then suddenly withdrawing them in the end on November 7, 1984. Quote, "What I testified about my personal relations to Çelenk was a lie. I wanted to cause him, and especially the Bulgarian authorities, difficulties with that," unquote, declared the Pope assassin. Bekir Çelenk, who had been interrogated as a witness by Martella in Sofia, had always denied that he had signed on Ali Ajah for the Pope assassination. Which role the Turkish drug and weapon dealer Çelenk really played in the Pope assassination, the investigating judge Ilario Martella could not elucidate. By the way, he eventually died of a heart attack in Turkish prison before he could be interrogated by Judge Palermo, who was looking into the Stibom arms for drugs ring. Judge Palermo himself narrowly escaped assassination by a car bomb. Continuing. Further, it can be learned from Martella's report that the money was to be paid to Musa Serdar Celebi, and like the weapons, was meant for the Gray Wolves. Musa Serdar Celebi officiated at that time as president of the Turkish Federation, located in Frankfurt, BRD. It was the West European variant of the MHP party and at the same time a cover organization of the Gray Wolves. In Zurich, Ali Aja lived at Mulugasa 29 and frequented all 10 at the Turkish Cultural Association, the Türk Kültür Ökazi, OUCAGI. Omer Bargi, BAGCI, cashier of this association, later admitted, quote, Ali Aja, who called himself Hasi, HACI, also visited me at my apartment in Dulaken and handed me a pistol that I kept for him. Later, I had to take this pistol to him in Milan. With this weapon, Ali Aja shot the Pope on May 13th of 1981. And again, this segment of text that I've been reading comes from the book Das Umfeld einer Skandals, The Background of Scandals. This is from Chapter 4, Heroin and Weapons. That was authored by Pascal Auclair and Frank Garbelli, and it was published by Verd Verlag in Zurich in 1990, of Zurich in 1990. Now, we've taken a look at a major drug bust of some individuals who, as it turned out, were accomplices of Mehmet Ali Aja in the shooting of Pope John Paul II, although the connection was not made immediately between this group and the milieu of the Pope shooting. It raises a number of questions. First of all, why would these individuals have been engaged in drug trafficking if indeed they were being paid by their Bulgarian alleged masters? Beyond that, why would people like Aurel Çelik, one of Mehmet Ali Aja's accomplices, take such risks if in fact Interpol was already looking for him in connection with the shooting of Pope John Paul II? And again, this drug bust took place in 84, the shooting of the Pope in 81. Also, why would the Bulgarians have allowed Aurel Çelik and others to flee to the West if in fact they might have implicated Bulgarians in the KGB? All of these are questions which remained unanswered. As it turned out, according to Mehmet Ali Aja, he claims that Bekir Çelenk, again an individual who was involved with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, offered him 3 million Deutschmarks and some weapons in order to shoot the Pope, and that then Mehmet Ali Aja, although he later retracted this, said that the weapons were going to go for the Gray Wolves, and the money was to be paid to Musa Serdar Celebi, an official of the Turkish Federation, the West German branch, the then West German branch of the National Movement or National Action Party. Again, as we looked at in the previous segment, and as we examined at considerable length in Radio Free America number 21, the National Action Party or National Movement Party, again, a pan-Turkist and a fascist political party in Turkey, a NATO nation, had very strong connections to then West German intelligence and also U.S. intelligence. The Gray Wolves, or elements of them, were used as labor enforcers in what used to be West Germany, keeping in line the various Turkish Gastarbeiters, or guest workers. Note now that although he later retracted it twice, Mehmet Ali Aja implicated Bekir Çelenk of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring as his paymaster. Although, according to Aja, Bekir Çelenk was acting on behalf of the Bulgarians and the KGB, the allegations concerning Bekir Çelenk raise some interesting questions, because the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, a massive operation headquartered in Milan, Italy, in fact had numerous connections, more connections, as I like to say, than a switchboard, but in fact the vast majority of those connections, ran in the direction of Western intelligence. And I would note, in the first place, that the head of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring was a Syrian national named Henry Arsan, who was a paid agent of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, and beyond that, or Drug Enforcement Administration. I would also note that he had been given at one point 100 kilos of morphine to, actually a large sum of morphine, I believe it was 100 kilos of morphine, in order to basically prime a major drug deal for the DEA. Henry Arsan later died of a heart attack before he could be sufficiently interrogated. That was a fate that befell many of the individuals in the Stibom milieu, and again, that milieu is very strongly connected to the shooting of Pope John Paul II. Stibom's headquarters were right above the Milan, Italy headquarters of the Banco Ambrosiano. I discussed that briefly in the previous segment. That bank headed by P2 member Roberto Calvi, P2 the Masonic Lodge headed by Licio Gelli, which basically was a crypto-fascist government that administered Italy. Roberto Calvi, P2 member like his predecessor, fellow P2 member Michele Sindona, was an advisor to the Vatican Bank. Stibom rented its headquarters from the Banco Ambrosiano. Their headquarters were right above Banco Ambrosiano's Milan, Italy branch. Some of the other principal individuals involved with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring were a fellow named Mehmet Kantas, again a Turk, who headed up the SUTAS wing of the Stibom operation. SUTAS, one of the major branches of Stibom, was headquartered in Los Angeles. Two other key operatives on behalf of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring were a former National Security Agency operative named Glauco Partel, G-L-A-U-C-O is his first name, P-A-R-T-E-L is his last name. Also a fellow named Eugene Bartholomaeus, a U.S. intelligence operative, and a former associate of, among others, ex-CIA agent Edwin Wilson, whose notorious operations were conducted on behalf of U.S. intelligence, although he was officially denied and left out in the cold and locked up. His numerous operations arming and training terrorist groups were, in fact, conducted on behalf of some branch of U.S. intelligence, although they officially denied that. That's called plausible deniability, and he was left to rot in prison. Some of the other operatives of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring concern people involved with the P2 Lodge. Licio Gelli, by the way, was an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, a longtime intimate of U.S. intelligence. Key P2 members who were also Italian intelligence operatives who were involved with various aspects of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring. First of all, Giuseppe Santavito. Giuseppe Santavito was a P2 member who was working with Theodore Shackley in the early 1980s at the very time that the Vatican and the Kremlin were achieving a backdoor diplomatic rapprochement over a number of issues. I discussed that in the last segment in this series. Also a fellow named Massimo Pugliese, last name P-U-G-L-I-E-S-E. Massimo Pugliese was a member of the P2 and was involved with some of the Exocet missile deals on behalf of P2. Those Exocets were to go to Argentina during the Falklands War. The operations of Stibom also involved a number of very interesting people. The late Italian actor Rossano Brazzi was implicated in many articles in some of the operations of Stibom, although that was officially denied. Rossano Brazzi, according to many of the articles, and this is in Radio Free America 20, was involved with some weapons deals along with former American President Richard Nixon and also Ronald Reagan, who obviously also became an American president. I would note that neither Glauco Partel nor Eugene Bartholomaeus were operatives of the KGB. The SUTAS was in Los Angeles. That is not a Soviet city, obviously. Santavito and Pugliese were key Italian intelligence operatives of the fascist P2 Lodge. Obviously, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan were not operatives of the KGB. The Stibom Arms for Drugs ring was involved in a number of things, including attempts to get nuclear weapons to Saudi Arabia and from there to the PLO. Also, they were major operations in both the Iran-Contra weapons transfers, the weapons transfers from U.S. intelligence to Iran, and also the Iraqgate scandals. Those two scandals overlap, as we've seen in a number of broadcasts, including Radio Free America number 38, and Stibom was heavily involved in weapons transfers to both Iran and Iraq, some of the many, many connections of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring. Again, I can appreciate that for many listeners, this recitation of some of these names and a brief description of some of these connections will appear more confusing than elucidating. I refer interested people to the aforementioned series Radio Free America shows 17 through 21. Radio Free America program number 20, in particular, deals with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring. And again, Bekir Chelenk, a key operative of that. Bekir Chelenk, by the way, died in prison when Judge Palermo was going to visit him. Judge Giuseppe Santavito died in prison of an apparent heart attack. So did Henry Arsan. The mortality rate around the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring was enormous. I would also note that in addition to renting their headquarters from the Banco Ambrosiano and having their headquarters right above Banco Ambrosiano's Milan headquarters, there was also slight capital participation in Stibom by the Banco Ambrosiano. An arms firm called Brugge Izar, headed up by a fellow named Renato Gamba, had 2% capital participation in it by the Banco Ambrosiano. Brugge Izar of Renato Gamba was deeply involved with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring. Now, as I mentioned in the previous segment, I recommend to interested listeners that in order to really flesh out this admittedly Byzantine series of connections, and in order to understand the significance of the Grey Wolf heroin trafficking in the mid-1980s, and the Bekir Çelenk allegations by Mehmet Ali Aja later retracted, get a hold of Radio Free America Show 17 through 21, arguably the finest work ever done about the shooting of Pope John Paul II. And again, those people who are not aware of just what an ignominious death the Bulgarian hypothesis died, or theory died, check out the truth in Radio Free America Show 17 through 21. The evidence points in the direction of Western intelligence as the authors of the shooting of the Pope, not the KGB and their Bulgarian surrogates.